Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. Carvana makes car buying easy. Isn't that right, hun? Dax? Dax?
Sorry, did you know about this 7-day money-back guarantee?
A week to evaluate seat comfiness, you say?
A week of terrain tests? Yeah, I can test the brake pad resistance at variable speeds.
Make sure all the kids' stuff fits nicely.
Make sure our stuff fits nicely.
Oh, the...
Right. Still need to buy the car. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Buy your car with Carvana today.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week, kicking it off with a real big one, Amazing Spider-Man number one from Marvel.
God.
Written by Joe Kelly, art by John Romita Jr. and Pepe Larraz. Now, I gotta tell you, I was a little dubious about this whole new number one thing.
Dubious? Oh, Alex doesn't trust the number one. That's my favorite number. We're number one.
Here's the thing about Amazing Spider-Man number one. I think we're all well aware there have been several number ones for Amazing Spider-Man.
No, this is the one. This is the number one. This is going to be a huge collectible issue. Hugely collectible.
So that was making me a little dubious. Also, the fact that it was plot-wise continuing, as far as we knew, directly off of Zeb Wells' run. We also had Joe Kelly and Justina Ireland writing a very good, I thought, storyline called Eight Deaths of Spider-Man right before this. So it was like, we're coming right after that. This isn't really a number one. This is just number 700 or whatever it is at this point, past there. But I got to give it to Joe Kelly here. He wrote a great number one issue of Amazing Spider-Man that resets the world of Spider-Man, is shockingly new reader friendly, where if you haven't been paying attention to what's going on with Spider-Man for years or really ever, you get a perfect introduction here, as well as new enemies, some old enemies. I was really, really pleasantly surprised by this.
Wow. Same. I think we can say definitively that the era of Shay has officially begun.
Oh, God.
Because Peter's
one little quibble with the book.
Right.
Oh, that scene with Shay where she's
probation?
Like...
Probation?
Yeah, you're on probation. He's like, whoa, are we broken up? And he's like, I don't know. I was like, what are we?
Here's the thing. Like, we've had our very fair, especially you, Alex, you hate Shay. Any Spider-Man issue that she, you do. You do hate Shay.
No, I don't hate Shay.
You hate the idea of Shay.
I hate the idea that we don't know anything about Shay, and I have no emotional investment in Shay other than she has a female form. I know that. She is named Shay. You could not pay me money to let you know what her last name is, and she's a nurse at Ravencroft. Like, that's literally all we know about her at this point. I want
to
find
to be
out
fair,
more about her. I want to care about her.
You want to fall in love with Shay as well. And to be fair, when I was like, I love Shay, and then you were like, yeah, what does she do? And I was like, I named the last girlfriend's job, and I was like, the lawyer. And you were like, I think that's the other girlfriend. And I was like, okay, fair. I don't know Shay either. But I thought this scene was very cute. I think she is going to be part of the main cast, and I'm here for it. A Spider-Man dating someone, no matter who it is a better Spider-Man.
What?
Because it makes it matches the lifestyle a little bit. And just to even talk about the lifestyle.
The lifestyle of fighting crime equals you have to be dating?
No, polygamy. What lifestyle
polygamy?
Are you talking about?
Yeah, Alex.
Cosplay?
Alex just is now a polygamist, so he's going to be sneaking it into a lot of the reviews tonight.
I don't want to brag or anything like that, but you know, it's a really interesting lifestyle to explore. And if anybody has any questions, hit me up at justintyler11@gmail.com.
Oh, good. That's really good. What I like about this issue a lot is the way that it takes all of the sort of too much of Spider-Man continuity of like him owning his own business, Parker Industries, him working for Green Goblin. And in he's interviewing Peter Parker's interviewing for jobs at the beginning, and they condense it down.
Interviews.
They condense it down and make it just other stuff that he's bad at, which matches with him just being like a photographer that's always needing money. And like, I was like, oh, they condensed all of that, made it one idea, and then just moved the story forward. Thought that was great. I like the action. I like that we get to just, one of the, my favorite panels in the book is he's investigating, he's hanging upside down in this apartment, and he's got his spider flashlight on, and it's just the Spider-Man face on the wall. I was like, that's, that doesn't make that makes sense. Me happy. It doesn't make sense. I agree. It's very weird to me. Like, imagine like if you had your own little symbol and you covered your like cell phone flashlight with it, so every time you turn it on, it was like, "Hey, it's the Pete symbol." Pete's on a case.
Ridiculous. That would be so ridiculous.
But I will say, satisfying. Loved it. And you know, we were talking about how the previous arc was very not Spider-Man, very like, you know, Galactic, Sidorak, all this Juggernaut stuff. And we get a little bit of that stuff here, and especially there's sort of a follow-up involving the Hellgate opening in a short at the end of the comic. And I was like, oh, that's not Spider-Man, but maybe it is. And I actually like the broad scope because they're doing the stuff I want and then going big with some other stuff.
First off, cool cover. Yeah, I was also a little dubious of the number one, but I love the team on this. The art style is fantastic. I'm hoping the Shay thing isn't going to work out so we can kind of get back on track. But
what do you mean by on track in that sense?
MJ, Team MJ.
Yeah, she's with Paul Rabin, I believe is his
last
name.
Yeah, she's with Paul, and she's also... She's with Paul, and she's also Venom. So she busy. Let her be.
Spider-Man's busy too, man. They can be busy together.
Mm-hmm. Getting busy.
Whatever. I don't want to get into it. What else did you think about the book?
Whatever, man.
I see this all the time online for so many people who are like, when are you going to get him back together with MJ?
Yep.
Guys, it's been 2 decades. Get over it.
No.
Yeah.
Zalman?
Get over it. Not you, Pete. Never get over it, Pete. Everybody else, get over it.
No.
No, Pete, cover yourself in it. Drown in it. Live it. Be it. Nothing else matters.
Yeah. I really like Pepe Larraz's art in here. I thought it was really kinetic and very fun. There's a good cartoony style that feels like a slightly more settled Humberto Ramos, almost, if that makes sense. Like, not quite as exaggerated as Humberto Ramos. But very fun throughout. I thought the fight with the rhino was good at the end.
Beautifully
there.
Beautifully drawn.
And fun to get some backups from John Romita Jr. as well. So,
hell yeah.
Great first issue.
Very cool. The only other thing I would say, they've made Peter look younger again, and I think that's actually smart. Cool. And it felt that way in the double date scene. I was like, oh, this is now matching in a nice way.
To de-age him? You think that's smart?
Yeah, because they're not erasing the continuity. They're just making Spider-Man more of what a new reader who's reading, say, a number one, might open this book and be like, wait, he's like 50? he looks like in his early 20s, even though he's owned multiple businesses. And I will say, they are committing to Norman Osborn being a part of this book and being not a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally currently in this issue, even though he's...
We'll see.
We'll see. But it is just... It's funny to me how important that seems to be to main Spider continuity right now, that Norman Osborn is always around. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. It's like, to your point, Pete, it's a little bit like, just pull the trigger. Chekhov's Goblin. Like, let's just get to it. Or not. Or have him do something else.
Well, but I think that something else is the thing that's going on here. This is me just speculating, but it almost feels like a laudable, obstinate nature about the thing where it's come as comic book fans, we're like, he's going to become the goblin. So they're playing it out like as long as humanly possible to have that always weighing over the proceedings with him, but letting them actually explore the character rather than like 3 issues and done. And I don't know. I think that's kind of cool.
It is, and it's sort of taking, it's not the same, but it's a little bit of the J. Jonah Jameson role that has been erased because Peter just doesn't do that job anymore because it doesn't really exist. So, like, there is this older guy who's, like, a little antagonistic, a little, like, important, but like not, you know, not being so integral to the story all the time.
Yeah. And if you're upset that he's not the Green Goblin, it's been 20 issues. Get over it. Get over it. Get over it. Come on. Speaking of number one issues, Adventure Time, number one from Odie Press, written and drawn by Nick Wynn and Derek Ballard. Previously, this was with Boom Studios, I believe, but now we're getting a brand new Adventure Time book following Jake and Finn. Justin, you're the big Adventure Time fan on the podcast. How'd you feel about this?
I really like this. I mean, we're getting... I've been... A slight spoiler for my own life, but I've been watching Adventure Time lately again. And so this felt like it's not... I feel like previous Adventure Time books have been almost in continuity with the animated show, and this one is sort of not, which I thought was interesting. Did you guys notice that? How much Adventure Time have you been watching?
I don't watch a lot of Adventure Time, but I do have a soft spot for Adventure Time. And, yeah, this comic is just so great. Whether or not you know Adventure Time or not, it's just – it's fun. The animation's great. It really does feel like the kind of cartoon come to life in such a great way. And, yeah, I just think they do such a great job on this comic and the show itself. So anytime you're getting Adventure Time, it's a good time.
I have watched, I think, the first season a bunch of times because I keep watching it, and then a couple of years pass by, and I'm like, oh, shoot, I don't remember what happened, and then I go back and watch the first season again, and then I forget about it, and then I watch it again.
What a loop you're in.
Yeah, I'm stuck in this endless loop. My kids are obsessed with it and have watched the whole thing. So I don't know. This worked for me, not really knowing about the continuity. I will say I told my son that there was a new comic coming up, and he's like, oh, what happens in it? And I was like, well, there's a computer princess. And he's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. So he was very specific about that.
Is he against princesses or computers?
No,
what's his stance?
I guess there's
that?
A specific thing with the princesses, and they all have gems or something like that. So there's a specific number of princesses. Is that close, Justin?
Well, there is. The thing
you know
is,
what, I don't care. Forget about it. It's fine.
Wow. No, that is a thing. That is a thing in some. Maybe a couple episodes of Adventure Time, but they're not hard and fast in the main show. It's more that this issue sort of goes back and does something that I think I've seen before. And that's one thing that the cartoon would contradict itself every now and again, but they wouldn't sort of redo something. And that's what seems to be happening here. But I like Computer Princess. I like the stuff we get at the end. Some of my favorite mythology parts of Adventure Time are touched on here. So it's like to just see that and move forward there. I just find it interesting that they're sort of rebooting, essentially.
I like the art in this. I like the writing. I thought it was fun. Fit nicely. They play with the panel structure. So
yeah.
First issue. Let's talk Absolute Batman number 7 from DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Marcos Martin, stepping in for this and the next issue for a 2-part arc, introducing Absolute Mr. Freeze. And Pete, you are a big fan of when people grossly stretch out their bodies. What did you think of this book?
Yeah, it's a nightmare situation. First off, badass cover, you know what I mean? Like badass cover.
Oh, really? But it's not winter anymore. It's not season.
Yeah, by the way, when you say badass cover, or this cover is so cool, since we do an audio podcast, would you like to describe what you like about the cover, or do you just want to say cool cover and move on?
I mean, you know, everybody's got their own opinion, you know, on what makes a cool cover. But I think,
well, yes, I wouldn't want to ask you your opinion on this podcast.
Yeah. He meant cool like it's cold because Batman's got being snowed upon.
No, I just think it's, you know, you kind of catch Batman in an interesting pose here. And it's kind of a badass stance.
Taking a shit in the snow, right?
Oh, how dare you, sir.
He dug a little hole.
Of course. Yeah. Clean up after your Batman, please. I enjoy the play of blue and black throughout this cover. How about that, Pete? Does that
work? Oh,
yeah, the colors are very, very nice. But yeah, just amazing art overall. Love the panels. Love the artistic choices being made here with the story of Freeze. This just continues to be great. And yeah, it's kind of an amped up of the things we know and love. So this is just such a fun ride, and I'm having such a blast with this comic. And The art sets such an interesting tone in a cool, unique world.
All the Absolute books, I feel like, are pretty good. They're all, like, having a slightly different take on what it means to be in this dark side-tinged DC universe. But I feel like Scott Snyder nails the, like, well, here's how I would want it to be different, scarier, and darker. And I think he nails that with this deep dive into the Freeze family and finding another sort of cracked mirror spin on it. And yeah, it was really good. The thing that I like most about this book, though, is the sort of crime alley gang that is Bruce Wayne and all the other Rogues Gallery guys who are his buddies.
Yeah.
We get a lot of Matches Malone here, a particularly horrifying panel happens.
Oh, man.
And I thought it was funny that Matches Malone is a person who I was like, he's going to look like Bruce. And I was like, nope, he purposefully does not look like Bruce. And I was like, I guess it's just that different. And that's what I think Scott is playing fast and loose, rightly so, with he's like, well, here's what I want to do. And it keeps us guessing, the reader, in, I think, a good way.
I also think, just a shout out to Marcos Martín's pencils throughout here, one of my absolute favorite artists. And versus the flashback issue, we had a couple of issues back that I'm totally blanking. It wasn't Gabriel Walta who did the art, right? Or was it?
I don't think it was Walter.
No, it wasn't. Whoever it was, that was a change of pace from the regular art. Marcos Martín feels like a very nice complement to Nick Jurgoda here. It's a different art style, but his clean lines, his more cartoonish look at Bruce and the other characters, that was really, really neat. And it's also funny, and I don't say this negatively at all, but it's funny that this title, up until now, the first arc, was very like Dark Knight's Metal, Scott Snyder writing in sort of the same mode he would do with Greg Capullo on Batman. And this one is like, what's the other thing Scott likes to do? Oh, creepy guys stretched out. And that's what we get in this issue.
He does love creepy stretched out guys.
He loves a stretch.
The witches. Loves that stuff.
Yeah, Slender Man is his whole thing. And Alex, you were right. It was Gabriel Walta.
Yes.
Nice. Oof.
I was very scared about that. What are we talking about?
Terrified.
I was scared that I got it wrong. People scared. Get very sensitive about artists online.
He turns into Jerry Seinfeld when he gets scared.
I got it wrong.
People are going to be upset at me.
Did you ever notice that Gabriel Walton did that issue?
Alex, what you just got wrong is you did Ross from Friends.
I know.
When you meant to do so. That, you can be scared about that. Cause
they're basically the same
Ross
guy.
Hive. What? Ross How Hive is coming. You. Ross and Jerry are the same guy. You're about to be killed.
I used to watch must-see TV on, you remember the Architects thing for the second Matrix movie, like all the TVs on the wall? But with like all of must-see TV at the same time.
Well, I mean, of course, the Blackout episode, which wove together the continuity of the entire must-see
Blackout Thursday, lineup. Of course.
Huge.
It was caused by Mad About You.
Yes, Mad About You messed up their building electricity. And it made one of the best Friends episodes, the Blackout episode. And the rest of them barely touched it, I think.
Yeah, what was the one that didn't do it? Seinfeld didn't do it, right?
Yeah, Seinfeld didn't do it. And then
Seinfeld
what was the,
didn't do it. Then Living, was it The Single Guy?
The Single Guy. And he was like, I'm canceled probably.
Transformers number 19, talking about The Single Guy from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Daniel Warren Johnson, art by Ludo
TWJ.
Lullaby, probably. This is a solo issue focusing on Megatron and giving us a flashback of how and why he turns into a tiny little gun.
He went from being a big old tank to a tiny little gun.
Yeah.
Pete?
A tiny, powerful gun. he changed this into a gun. That's one of his things. First off, badass cover here, okay? We got Megatron versus the Sharktacons, which is a little bit of spoiler for what's to come in the issue. But yeah, this is just really an awesome kind of look at Megatron. And this, oh my God, this kind of like trial goes on and gets weird, man. Oh my God. But man, what a last panel. I mean, you have to be so excited, right? I mean, I screamed out loud. I mean, you see Starscream pick up Megatron Just lost it. I just lost it. Like, yeah, they don't historically get it along. So this is very exciting.
Historically, Starscream never picks up Megatron.
Yeah, well, he never picks up his obviously friend.
He's picked boss. Up Megatron before, like, but they
it's
don't.
Like his boss.
Now, and okay, explain
is Megatron
this
his
so
boss?
When he's in gun form, that's how mm-hmm. he controls people. Like, they pick up the gun and they're like, oh, I gotta shoot this gun. Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Is it? I think someone has to pull his trigger.
Yeah, but he's mentally controlling them when he's in gun form.
Seems
right?
like it.
Is his trigger like sort like a sex thing? Is like an orgasm thing?
Oh, no, yeah. It's a trigger.
Like when he gun. Pulls his trigger, he's like, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, Megatron.
Oh man, you guys!
Here's
the
thing: I enjoyed this.
This is very enjoyable, though, and
this issue was very good.
This is also enjoyable for Megatron.
That's yeah, Megatron's loving it. He's like, "Fire again, 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 again." This wait 10 minutes again.
What I want to say, blanks.
It just makes the Transformers the movie, the animated movie, so much like must see for this
TV.
Series.
Yeah. Must see TV.
And I'm so happy that we're getting this kind of homage to that great movie. And
did you ever see, by the way, Blackout Saturday, when on Saturday morning they blacked out Transformers, Smurfs, Snorkston to it? I remember that.
I thought it was crazy that episode.
Dog City. Dog City caused it.
Now look at us just dropping absolute nonsense on people. A lot of Googling happening from our listeners. I like that episode of Friends where Ross picked up Megatron and just shot Apollo, his rival for Rachel, right in the face. And Megatron was like, do it again, Ross.
Yeah, what season did Megatron come in? It was one of the later seasons, I remember that.
Yes, definitely. And it's when, like, everyone dates. So, like, Megatron and Phoebe were together for a while. And then, like, Rachel was like,
was
I want to date
Megatron. I like that. I like that. It was a surprising pairing. I know they were never going to be endgame, but, like...
They're not endgame.
Megatron and Phoebe? With that episode where Megatron sung Smelly Cat? So funny.
So funny. Iconic. I like this issue.
Sorry, quick, I just want to check in with Pete. What was your favorite part of this conversation?
The Ultimates, number 11.
Justin's actually going to say something about it.
I want to say some positive stuff, because I thought this issue was good. We've been talking about Transformers and how it feels like every issue is the same lately. And this one is different in a good way. I like the way we learn this story. The thing that is crazy to me is that Megatron turns into a gun that someone else has to hold. And why? That's canon, right? Pun intended.
It does.
You don't have to.
He can shoot on his own.
But why is the leader, he turns into a gun that another Transformer has to hold?
That's kind of how this guns work. Did the toy turn into a gun?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that's why.
And that's where it came from.
Right. Yeah. And in the cartoon, he also turned into a gun?
Yep.
And did he float?
The toy turned into a gun that a kid could hold, is what I'm assuming.
No.
And that's not a joke.
I'm honestly asking.
I feel like I'm trying to understand the origin.
Robots are bigger than humans. You know what I mean? So
definitely, I'm saying that. But for the toy, I know in the comic, but I'm saying the toy would have turned from a robot into a gun.
The cartoon.
Yes, I'm not besmirching the canon. I'm aware, but I'm saying the toy turned from a Transformers level toy into a gun a kid could hold. Is what I'm assuming was the origin.
Right. And so this is also seriously
why else
asking.
Would it be?
So like when they were coming up with Transformers, they're like, what does that one turn into? Oh, that's a car. What about that one? Oh, that's a truck. What about that one? That's a plane. What about that one? That's a fucking gun.
And that's the baddest one.
That's the baddest one. So sorry, just to check, the rest of them are vehicles except for a gun, which doesn't go anywhere.
Starscream turns it into an airplane, dude. You know what I mean?
That's a vehicle.
That's fine. That goes somewhere. That is a vehicle. That's all I'm saying. They're all vehicles. One of them is a vulture. I know that, which is also kind of confusing.
Why is that confusing?
But at least a vulture goes somewhere.
There was one that turns into a T-Rex. There's one that turns...
There are a bunch of bots that go bots, if you will.
Oh, my
except
God.
For
that's
Megatron.
A completely different thing.
Pete, I'm sad. I'm sorry
GoBots
that you're...
completely different.
It's not completely different. It's robots that turn into stuff. So I wouldn't call it completely different. And I'm sorry, Pete, you have to defend the choices of, like, insane people who turn toys into stories.
Yeah.
But you've put yourself in this position and seem like you want to be there. In a way, you sort of turn into a gun that we fire at yourself in a lot of ways.
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways. Anyway, yeah. It's fun. It's just crazy. Like, picking this up, if you had never heard of Transformers and reading this issue and like, that guy's badass. Wait, he turns into a little teeny gun that his friend shoots? Okay. Okay. I'm curious what we're doing here. But we all know that there's a real reason for that.
Which is?
That it was a toy.
You got to sell toys in the 80s.
It was a gun. That was back when most of our candy was cigarettes. So it was a different time.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Ultimates, number 11 from Marvel, written by Dennis Camp, by Juan Forgeri. In this issue, the Ultimates are invading Asgard to take it back from Loki, and we get an issue that is entirely splash pages, along with a poem by Dennis Camp.
Poem?
Justin,
a song.
You are in the camp. Are you in the camp?
Band camp?
The bad. Yeah, bad camp, sure.
I'm in band camp? Nice. That's a good one. I all of these issues are good. This one, I like, this is a hard writing assignment that he gave himself.
Yeah.
To make this sort of like mythological song for Thor and Sif to do battle against a lazy Loki. But I enjoyed it. I liked, there's a lot of politics woven in here and maybe a more distant way than some of the other issues of this. But I like that Dennis Camp is keeping that going all the time in this comic. And the stuff at the end made me very excited for what's coming next with Tony Stark.
Yeah, I just think that, like, this is a fun thing to kind of do in comics. And I think, like, what a cool exercise and what a cool idea and how it's well executed in this. This is beautiful panels, just showcasing art, these beautiful splash pages, full page, just awesome. I love the showcase art. And it's also like, we read a ton of comics, so reading this was kind of a nice refresher. It was like, oh, what a fun choice. This is different. It makes everything kind of feel new and exciting. So I felt like it was a impressive thing to do and well executed.
A palate cleanser. We should sing a little song in between reviews.
I agree with you. This was very refreshing and fun. I don't know if it was quite as heavy as some of the other issues, but that's all right. Good art. Good writing. Fire and Ice When Hell Freezes Over, number one from DC Comics, written by Joanne Starer, art by Stephen Byrne. This is a sequel series to the first Fire and Ice series by this team. They are now living on a tropical island outside of Smallville, working at not a barbershop. What is it?
Salon.
Salon. That's the word that I was looking for. Salon. Also, because of absolute power, they have switched powers, but to spoil the end here, because this is part of the pitch of the book, it's actually a body switching comedy where instead of switching powers back, they end up switching bodies. Fun stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
Speaking of change of pace, I think I like this even better than the first series. I'm a big sucker for body switching comedies, and I thought this was a really fun setup here. The whole cast is good. I really like body switching comedies. I don't know why.
No.
I just really enjoy them. I'm a sucker for a low bar.
Friday.
Yeah.
Freakier Friday.
I was reading this just knowing Alex was having a great time, and And I think that's nice and important. And I
Alex
think
and,
you know, there's a comic out there for everybody.
Alex and fan of the show Jolene is definitely in on this in our comic book club
Discord.
Shout
out to Jolene.
Shout out to Jolene.
What do you think about the fact that ice turns into a gun? Because I think that's weird. That doesn't...
Totally justified. Now it makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Alex. I think
yes.
No, Pete's doing some Googling. I really enjoyed this. I think it is like the story's just a little bit more in motion. The character games are there. We have a nice, like, fun connection between friends and a little bit of like issue rivalry that's happening here. And I love the way that it ended.
Yeah, I just think they should have named this like Assholes Getting Haircuts, because they were really kind of poking fun at people who were getting haircuts.
I don't know if I would pick up a comic name that.
Yeah, I don't know. Might have
probably
not
the
sold.
First title. You know what I mean?
Right. You know what they should do is they should A/B test titles for comic books and release them next to each other. So you have Fire and Ice When Hell Freezes Over, number one, and Assholes Getting Haircuts, number one. See which sells more.
Yeah.
Well, I will say that, you know, everyone gets their hair cut, so it's a universal idea.
Mm-hmm. And everybody is assholes. Let's move on, speaking of assholes, and talk about Vatican City, number one, from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mark Millar, art by Per Berg. I got to be honest, I've been leaving Mark Millar's stuff out of here because he seems to have aligned himself with Gabergate, but this concept was so classic, stupid Mark Millar, I had to throw it in there and see what happens. It's about vampires taking over the world and attacking Vatican City, per the title. What did you guys think about this one?
Well, it's weird to say this, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun, kind of over-the-top action, cool last-page reveal. I thought it was just kind of like just kind of turn off your brain, popcorn kind of thing.
I mean, I don't know. It does feel like, I thought it was fine. I feel like Mark Millar is like, you know, he's sort of far down the old idea funnel, and it feels like they're getting a little like medium at this point. And you know, I think the art is cool, but it doesn't, I thought it was going to be a little bit more, it just felt very middle. Like I wanted a little bit more of like, this is different in this big way. And it was a little unclear what the big difference we were doing here.
I mean, the big thing that Mark Millar has going is he has these big, broad pitches to the point that, you know, it became a thing that we made fun of. Like, what if Batman was evil and wore white? You know, is just...
Yeah.
It's across the board. But this is like, this is a... I think a solid idea for a movie pitch, if you have some more meat on the bone there. Vatican City is the last city on Earth that's protected from vampires because it's religious and they can't make their way in. But like you're saying, I think it was kind of messily executed in this issue.
Yeah.
The art was a little hard to follow sometimes from panel to panel. And the story, too, it both... Yeah, it almost felt like it spent too much time on vampires take over the world and by not enough time on Vatican City and what that means. Maybe that will happen in subsequent issues, but right now it just doesn't feel like they've used the setting or the concept enough, and I want to be kind of blown away by that first issue.
Yeah, because I agree with you. It just in general feels like mid and like... It felt like a World War Z attempt with the first, you know, half of the book. When I would have much preferred this to be like very Vatican focused and have them just be the island that is like, oh my God, we are, everything is falling apart and we're, and it just be like, if it was our audience surrogate characters, like this, like young priest who's like new to Vatican City or whatever, young cardinal, like, oh no, I just got here and now the world has ended and we're the only place. And then the reveal at the end feels really nice and surprising. And I don't know, I guess it just felt like we don't need so much of the stuff we've seen a million times from Mark also.
Yeah, too bad. Anyway, moving on. Action Comics 1085 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Gavin Guidry. Here we are getting a story of Superman heading to the Arctic and finding some weird enemies there. We had Gavin Guidry on our live show down in New Orleans, and he was very excited about drawing Superman for this. So very cool to see it here. No pun intended about the ice. But what did you guys think about this issue?
This is fun. It was cool to see Lois kind of being like, hey, Clark, you got to go on this thing for me. It was nice to kind of see her handle Superman a little bit. But yeah, you know, people don't talk about cyber bears being a problem in Greenland, but it's a fucking problem.
And why do you think Trump wants it?
Oh, yeah.
We got to get the cyber bears. Scourge. The cyber scourge.
So yeah, I thought this was a fun issue, fantastic art, cool to kind of see the ice suit, you know.
This had a nice classic, old school, out of continuity Superman feel. Like, it's not, in everything that's happening with, Lois Lane having superpowers and all that, we're just not doing that here. And so if you want like a nice, like, baseline, I guess, where Clark and Lois work together. She knows he's Superman. They are married. He goes on assignment and has to do Clark and Superman. It's funny to me that he knew to pack like an Arctic specific Superman suit.
She lectured him about it. She was like, make sure you dress appropriately because it's going to be cold out there, which is code for take your Arctic suit with you.
What's so good about the Arctic suit? It's warmer? Like, I feel like doesn't bother him.
Yeah. It fades into the background so he can camouflage, except for his head.
He's blending in. When does he ever blending in anywhere?
I don't know.
Dude wears, red.
Cool. I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
And I really like Gavin's. Gavin's Superman is really good, but his Clark Kent is even better. There's nebbishy Clark Kent, like, holding up his papers and everything. Very fun.
Yeah, and we get like some classic switcheroos here. Like, I really like this. It felt retro in the right way while still being a good story.
Storm number seven from Marvel, written by Mirwa Ayodele, art by Luciano Vecchio. Bunch of stuff going on with Storm, but in this issue, she's fighting a giant snake with an amped up maggot who has been reborn and meets a bunch of thunder gods who are coming directly for her. Lots of stuff going on in this issue, but we are now past the X-Manhunt crossover. What do you guys think about this?
This is just great. I love what's happening in this issue. This is just Storm being such a badass. Love all the action. And then the kind of cool build up towards the end here where we're getting like this giant kind of god fight. And I cannot wait for the next issue. I'm really happy with how they're treating Storm. Storm is this epic. And so it's great to see her kind of getting that kind of treatment. So I'm having a blast with this.
So much happens in this comic every issue, and the dialogue is just really crackling. Like, the use of maggot is great. I like the sort of the bigness of Storm. We're not getting caught up on the details of her being now a galactic level hero. They're just like moving into the next piece, and it's just very like smartly done. Like, this is what I think people think Mark Millar's comics are. And he's not, to keep shitting on him, he's not doing storytelling like this. And this book is. This book feels big. It's moving. It's giving us really original ideas, moving through it in a way that is like we never feel bogged down. And the characters are big, easily knowable, and the emotion is there. And then we get one of the best Iron Man scenes I've seen since the Iron Man White Queen stuff from last year. I love this scene between the two of them. Great fights, and then just a nice reveal at the end. Like, I don't know. This book is cooking. I think it's has the belt for the best X-Men book right now.
Ooh.
I would say.
Golden Rage, Mother Knows Best, number one from Image Comics, written by Chrissy Williams, art by Lauren Knight. This is a sequel series set in a world where women, after they go through menopause, are sent on a island to fight each other and die. Sort of plays out like a, I don't know, reverse Yellow Jackets. That's a bad way of describing it. But whatever it is in this issue.
The flip where it's all the people, the older
women
are
the
ones who are doing
that.
Yeah.
Why not? Anyway, this issue, we are resetting things, finding out where our characters are now that winter has started to hit the island and what's going on. And there's a big twist by the end. Pete, you love a good grandma. What'd you think about this one?
Well, this Pete, you'd be rowing a boat to this island if you lived in this universe. Tell us about it.
Well, yeah, I'm hoping that my later years will be described as Golden Rage. So I'm very excited by this book. And I do think this is a fun idea and very well executed here. Also, I'm a sucker for a map. And I love the fact that we got a map in the back of this, you know, to really kind of let you understand what's going on this island. But yeah. There's nothing like a badass old lady who's just doing her rounds, you know what I mean? But then you find that one thing that's really going to set your island on fire. So, oh, man, Pete's what crush. Are they going to do, you know? So,
I love the idea, Pete, of you being the Steve Trevor of this island of, like, older women. That's the dream, is you this is your Themyscira, let's be honest. This is fun. I like the main character only because she's featured a bit and then talked about a lot. Is really interesting, and I like the it's a surprise we get at the end.
Yeah.
Aquaman number 4 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by John Timms. Aquaman is on the search for the missing Atlanteans, including Mera. He is becoming a fabled being called the Dark Tide, meeting a bunch of other weird mermaid and other assorted characters. What'd you guys think? How are you feeling about Aquaman's weird adventures so far?
I like when Aquaman is out of his element. I like when there's other stuff happening. Well, he's in the water. He's in different water. But, like, just a character that I think works better when he's not, like, managing Atlantis as the king. I feel like those stories aren't really working for me when I think that's been his continuity for a while. I like this opening we get with it's just, like, him falling in love with Mera in a nice way. And then the rest of the story, like, a lot of the story is about him getting a sick weapon.
Yeah, I know, cool. He's very excited about it, which is fun. You know what I mean?
Cuts a ship in half.
Oh, you know? Sick trident, bro.
Yeah, 3 out of 4 doctors recommend that.
Yeah, that's yes, for sure.
Exactly. That's what my dentist is saying to me, is like, get a trident.
Get a sick trident.
Oh, man, I keep blowing that. I love that. Well, that's the thing. 3 dentists just want you to, like, floss. And then the 4th one's like, get a fucking trident, you coward. Get out there and fight some shit. I'm like, yeah, yes.
That's the thing. Nobody talks about, like, dentists are wild cards. You know what I mean? Like, they really got some crazy ideas.
When they're saying fight back against tooth decay, they're talking about, like, literally. Like,
with your fists, yeah.
Join the fight. So,
I think this is a cool cover. I love the action in this. I love the kind of things that Aquaman goes through here. And it's fun when he gets excited about his trident. It makes me excited about his trident. And then a cool dragon ship at the end. So, yeah, I've been enjoying this. This has been cool.
The Great British Bump Off, Kill or Be Quilt, number 1 from Dark Horse Comics, written by John Allison, art by Max Sarin. This is a sequel series to the first one that was set at a Great British Baking Show style series show. weird to say show much. Twice in a row, but anyway, there's a murder there, and one of the contestants has tried to solve it. This one takes it to a new location and introduces a quilting store. It is also, and I say this complimentarily, way weirder. Like, crazy weirder. The first series was so straightforward and very fun and very funny and like a cozy mystery. And this one, they're turning into other objects and water and playing cards and stuff. I was not expecting that at all.
Yes, but I will say, like, I know you love the Great British Bump Off, but to me it felt just a little bit like expected, because it was like a mystery about the Great British Bake Off, basically. Great British Bake Off plus murder. Easy formula. This is so different, and I'm fully, like, more engaged because it is weirder. I like the characters. I like following our main characters, just like vibe and adventure. There's just great little moments. There's in the beginning of this issue, she's just setting sail. Her friends are setting her on her way. And one of them is reaching over to the ship and finger touching with a sea monster's hand for no reason.
Yes,
like it's never referenced.
It's and never like, referenced again. I was like, I was what like, the I love fuck it. Is that?
I love little things like that. It's whimsical. It's fun. Like it's
but,
so comic booky, and I love that it's just not referenced all the time. So I'm fully on board with this series.
But that stressed me out because then the rest of the, this issue kind of stressed me out a little bit. So fun idea.
You don't like amazing canals.
Wait for it. So fun idea, amazing art, cool characters, but like stuff like that. Just I was like, wait, so there's sea monsters? There's just monsters in the water? And then she gets on a boat that's in that water, and I'm kind of stressed out about the monsters the whole time. But then also she, like, the boat gets untied because she's not good with knots, and her friend even called it, and I was like, oh, my God, a psychic friend. Now I want to know more about that. But then when the boat starts floating away, she doesn't run and jump on the boat. She's just like, oh, man, my boat. And I was like, you can't just, like, go back to something else when your boat is floating down the canal.
It's amazing to me.
I got so stressed out.
You need to, first off, take a chill pill. And by that, I mean, like, weed pill or whatever. But the way that this comic stresses you out is the way that Megatron turning into a gun stresses me. Like, we are literally on opposite sides of the thing. Because I'm like, as soon as he turned into a gun, I was like, how is this going to work? I'm thinking about that. And you're like, this is stressing me out because that sea monster is just touching that other girl's hand.
Yeah.
We're different.
Yeah. Different guys for different thighs, I always say. Batman Dark Patterns, number 5 from DC Comics, written by Dan Waters, art by Hayden Sherman. Last issue, we found out that the ventriloquist has taken over an entire apartment building and turned it into his new Scarface. And this issue, we find out a lot more about that as Batman continues to explore the building and fight his way to the top. This series is awesome.
Yeah, agreed. I'm having such a blast with this, and I don't like Scarface as a villain at all, but what they're doing is really kind of evolving the character past that. And, man, just love the art, love the action. This is just such an interesting story, and I cannot wait to read the next issue. This is very exciting.
Yeah, the art is so great in this. The way we get so much just vertical sort of frame shifts on it.
Yeah.
We're looking way up at Batman doing stuff like on the outside of a building or way down on him trying to climb up the steps in this like really nightmarish soundscape building that is really cool. Like, and we get a couple like red herrings in this that are interesting. Curious to see where it goes from a plot perspective. Like, I'm happy, you know, we talked about the last book being sort of weird, and that doesn't slow down my enjoyment of the book. I want this book to be a little bit weirder with what's happening. I felt like this second issue was very straightforward with the storytelling, when the first was a little bit more atmospheric and sort of strange Lynchian. And this one feels very much like Batman is just trying to get to that 12th floor. I was like, oh, get weirder with it. So we'll see, I guess, how we go with the next issue. The next is the last.
Yep.
No, man.
Well, there's another
arc.
Arcs. Yeah, there's
yes,
more
the
arcs,
last
this
of
is
this.
The end of the mystery. Yes.
Yes, exactly.
The Uncanny X-Men, number 13 from Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by David Marquez, is similar to Storm. We are now past the X-Men hunt and getting a bunch of other stories. Gambit is hanging out with the dragon. The Outliers are exploring the outlying parts of their property.
The Dark Artery, Alex.
The Dark Artery. And there is a third thing happening that I'm completely blanking on.
We're getting a backstory about the house.
There's a flashback for a fair bit
of the issue. But I said this on the live show, but Gail Simone was talking about how this is her favorite arc that she's written for this this book. And just for reading this first issue, like, I'm fully on board. I love how weird this book is. Like,
yeah.
Gambit is hanging out with a dragon and they're like buds. They're like, this is like a huge threat earlier.
It's like How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, except, you know, that movie, they're just doing a shot-for-shot remake of the animated one. That's crazy.
What So, and they greenlit How to Train Your Dragon 2 live action. So presumably that's a shot for shot remake of How to Train Your Dragon 2. I don't know.
Is that movie going to crush?
We're out of ideas. We're out of ideas. Anyways,
but except for the comic book industry, because there are a lot of new ideas here. Yes. I like that Gambit and his dragon are friends. It's like Pete's dragon, except Gambit's. We get a lot of backstory on Gambit and some of his feelings about growing up. I love the backstory where we're getting sort of the secret life of being a mutant in the a black mutant in the segregated South, which is really interesting and, you know, very light touch of like we're just getting a couple pages, look mm-hmm. at it. But it's going to get like bigger and bigger and inform where the X-Men are living now. And then we get our outliers, characters that I was like, they seem like fine. Like, we don't know a lot about them. I don't know what they're doing. Really deepening their relationships, what we know about them as they explore this like strange, fucked up thing that's outside of this small town. Cool. I love this.
Yeah, I also really loved it. Also, this cover is badass. It kind of reminds me of like a Hardy Boys cover almost.
Oh, yes.
Just really cool.
And I think we can all agree there's nothing more badass than the Hardy Boys.
Oh, my God. but you can tell Gail Simone is having fun with this because it really is such a cool story and so well done. Yeah, I was just super impressed with this issue. I'm liking the time we get to kind of spend with different characters here. Really, really love the art style. Fun last panel reveal.
Yes.
And, yeah, fun Gambit and his giant monster dragon there. But I'm just worried about Rogue because she is just freezing while Gambit's out just having the time of his life with his dragon. And she doesn't have her comforter. You know what I mean? He stepped out to get her the comforter and then ran off with his dragon. And, you know, she's just there so freezing, so cold. Sounds like somebody's dog agrees with me.
The dog always agrees. All right, why don't we move on and talk about Phantom Road, number 11 from Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Gabriel H. Walta. This title has been away for a long time, but that's okay because we're coming in on a new arc that is jumping back years to give us more of the origin of this weird road that is full of, what do I call them, homunculi, golems, something like that. We're not quite sure. There's a lot of weirdness going on. And here we find out more about those origins. I thought this was great. The first 10 issues have been so purposefully strange and oblique. It's nice to start getting some answers here.
Yeah.
Even if it raises more questions. Cool series, great art.
I mean, same. I feel like this reminds me of reading Department of Truth, which has been following a similar path of like.
How dare you?
I don't know why you're mad about that. Another great book.
This isn't that tripped out and weird. You know what I mean? It's also, we don't know
this if this is not historically.
It's not as tripped out as that is.
Okay, great. Well, we're comparing apples and slightly redder apples. But what I was trying to say is that like both of these books very coy with their information. I feel like now two arcs ago, Department of Truth was like, here's all the answers. Phantom Road with this issue is like, okay, we're going to give you the backstory. This felt so much like, I think it's the 35th anniversary of Twin Peaks this week. This felt so, I love Twin Peaks, but this feels like the Dale Cooper adjacent FBI Twin Peaks, where we're getting these guys who are like regular people. We're getting them being regular people as they get into a very deep, dark mystery. I like both these characters. So excited that this is back.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with Justin's insanity, but yeah, we were kind of in this strange world, so now we kind of have two, what we think are two normal characters trying to tackle this kind of mysterious problem. So I'm excited about what's going to happen moving forward. And like the Zalbatron said, yeah, we're finally getting some answers to this kind of like esoteric tripped out book that was before us. So this is really starting to kind of cook, and I'm very excited about it, but can't say enough about the tone that the art just sets. It's creepy. These still kind of panels feel extra still and extra creepy. It's just really impressive artistically what's being done in these pages.
Don't be afraid. It's Gabriel Walton.
There you go. DC versus Vampires, World War V, number 8 from DC Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg and Shane McCarthy. Art by Otto Schmidt and Fabio Veras. This continues the war between the vampires and the humans, with Darkseid in the middle trying to take everything over. Then we get a backup story featuring Wildcat.
Yes.
That brings him to the brink. You guys love the series. What'd you think about this issue?
Goddamn right.
I mean, let's just take a quick snapshot of there's like a four page section of this story where we have.
we're not posing for snapshots right now.
Oh, no. Keep going, Justin. We want to hear your barking. Justin's dogs are barking.
Should I take over?
Yeah, you take over while his dog barks.
Yeah. So I love this. A ton of action. This continues to be so badass. Really love the end. I don't want to spoil it, but man, this is just kind of really ramping up, which seems insane because it's DC versus vampires, kind of versus the world. So how can it keep getting crazier? But it does. Raising the stakes, baby. This is just an absolute roller coaster of a fun time.
What I was going to say, I just murdered my dog. That's what
don't do that.
He's actually fine. I have a bunch
of cats, but I removed all their vocal cords so that they wouldn't interrupt my podcast. So that's a hot tip for any pet owners around here.
What the fuck? Very Dr. Nice. Moreau, what the fuck are you doing over there?
Dr. Moreau, I'm not changing them into hybrids.
You're changing them into quieter cats. They're hybrid silent. You're doing too much, bro.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You're very supportive of me taking out my cat's vocal cords.
You're doing too much.
That's not what I'm saying.
Thank you.
What I was going to say before, there's a four-page section in here where it's Batman and Green Lantern hanging out, except it's Ra's al Ghul as Batman and Alfred as Green Lantern. And it's just like everything's so twisted, like 4 clocks away from normal, but treated as completely like, hey, this is what's going on. And there's even a couple sections in here where it's like, hey, man, get in the game. I know it's your stress, but like this world is crazy, right? and I like that. There's a groundedness to the level of insanity in this book that I think Matt Rosenberg is so good at delivering. I love the Oliver Queen being such a leader here, and then we get a fun reveal at the end.
The Moon Is Following Us, number 8 from Image Comics, written by Daniel Warren Johnson, art by Daniel Warren Johnson and Riley Rosmo. After the big revelation of the last issue that the father was molested as a child, he is avoiding talking about that all this issue while they try to rescue his daughter from a dream state. Pete, you're a big fan of this team. What'd you think about this one?
Yeah, first off, crazy cover, just kind of insanity, but really awesome. I love the art. This is worth it for the art alone. This magical kid world that is created in this is just really impressive. Some crazy twists and turns here. Dak could be in real trouble, but man, I cannot wait to keep reading what's going to happen next, because this is great. And what's awesome about Daniel Warren Johnson, and you know, he tackles big issues in interesting ways and brings things in such a interesting kind of creative look. It's impressive to see what he does.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This is a book that I'm liking the way it's moving right now. But then they introduced the molestation thing at the end of last issue, and I was like, what is all this going to mean at the end? Because it's like,
right,
you talk about being stressed. That's the kind of idea that you introduce, and then this issue doesn't touch on it at all. Except for again at the end,
I wish you wouldn't have said it like that, but all right.
Well, okay, but that's what I mean. It feels like unacknowledged in a way that I'm like, it's just a big. There's a lot of ideas at play from the beginning to the end of this comic, And it feels like for a while it wasn't working, and then all of a sudden it came together, and I was like, yes, great. And then now we have other big ideas on the table, and I don't know how it's all going to amount to, or what it's going to amount to at the end of the story.
Trust it, man. Trust it. It's in good hands.
I want to, and maybe it's purposefully stressful from a narrative point of view.
It's a stressful topic.
Yeah.
We shall see. Green Lantern Corps number 3 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams and Morgan Hampton, art by Fernando Pissarin. The Corps is continuing their fight slash help it out with the Red Lantern Corps, or at least what is left of them. And also,
yeah, they really are fret buds.
Yeah, they're best buds, like Adventure Time. And also in this issue, there was a big Eagle Man inside of Thanagar, and he hatches and flies off into
the universe. It's an nth mental god, dude. Come on, bro.
Oh, I'm sorry. Horus. His name is Horus.
It is Horus. It was crazy the way they're like, oh, he's vaguely Egyptian? Okay. I guess it all tracks in the story. But, like, it was, you made a reference to it, but it was sort of an Adventure Time adjacent that the planet was an egg and then it hatched. And he was like, well, I like you. Bye. I'm going to come see you in a dream. That's literally what he says to Shira. He's like, I'm going to check in with you
really
in a dream.
I continue to like the chemistry between Jon Stewart and Hawkwoman. I think that's fun. And between the art style and the writing, it feels like a natural extension of Geoff Johns and Ivan Reis's run on Green Lantern. That's definitely the vibes that I'm getting here. And I like that run, so happy to have more-ish of it.
Yeah, cool action cover, and the kind of the dinner date that we get here with John and him talking about his mom was really nice. And there was so much crazy madness happening, which is cool, and very kind of cool to the Green Lantern world, and a lot of great cameos and kind of different characters you get to see in this. But also the kind of smaller stuff is powerful as well too, so well balanced.
Well balanced is a great way of saying it. Like the scene, the dinner date you reference, it really is like a workplace comedy for superheroes where they just have like a nice little hang in the middle, which was great.
Jump Scare number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Denny Luckert. This is focusing on a character who has the power to channel things from horror movies she likes, which she uses to kind of fight crime, but her sister has been kidnapped by a bunch of other horrors that have brought into this world the same way, and she is going to have to choose whether to fight against them. I continue to really enjoy this series. I think I actually like the second issue maybe even more than the first, now that I understand how her powers work.
Yeah.
Exploring the world more. It's an interesting mythology. Good stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Plus a crazy cool cover. This is gross fun. I'm having a blast with all the kind of stuff that's going on. This is kind of badass, this main character kind of fighting her way through, so it's kind of cool to kind of get to know her as this is all kind of going down and what's happening with her and her sister and stuff. So yeah, I'm having a blast with this. Tons of action and some fun movie references, so yeah, what's not to love?
This is my Punisher. I really like this comic. Like, I like the vibe of her as a, you know, sort of hero's a strong choice for her, but like as a anti-hero and what she does, it's funny while also the balance between horror and comedy is really well done here. So I think this is a great, if you're looking for a good superhero horror comedy comic, start with number 1 and pick this up.
I can't wait to take the Jump Scare quiz later.
Ooh, Geiger number 13 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Geoff Johns, art by Gary Frank. Geiger has bonded with the radioactive woman, but she's got an agenda of her own, and all starts to come down in this issue. If you were shipping them, get off that ship, man, because it ain't going nowhere.
Well, you can fight with who you love.
That's right.
With your radiation powers.
Your radiation lover.
Yeah.
Yeah. They could have a big bang at some point, I guess.
Wow.
You have a theory about that, right, Alex?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the good news is we finally got to see more of the two-headed wolf dog in that. So that's just glorious.
I did think of you when they checked in on him. And they were like, where is he? Oh, he's getting a bath from the robot.
Yeah, the robot.
The robot's giving him a bath. And he's like, how did he let you give him a bath? Because he doesn't let me do that. I was like, and again, like sort of sitcom adjacent what's happening in this issue. But I actually like it. I feel like we're finally getting Geiger to warm up a little bit to the story, and we're getting to see him in between him being incredibly upset all the time. So
yeah,
that's
I hope,
nice.
I worry that given that we know there's going to be a big fight between them and a betrayal, that's going to reverse all that character development where he's like, no, I never should have trusted anybody.
Oh, ooh. No.
But we'll see.
Here's open, because I think this is moving in the right direction. I want to see it continue on. I want to like Geiger. I want to hang with Geiger.
You want to Liger, Geiger, I don't know. Behemoth number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Grant Spatore and Ryan Angle, art by Jay Martin. The concept here is, what if a bus full of people got swallowed by a Godzilla-style monster, and they are trying to fight their way out, or more specifically, they are trying to find safety on a boat that was swallowed weeks earlier inside the Behemoth and discovering some disturbing truths inside. We also got a very fun backup story here about the Behemoth attacking during ancient Japan, I assume is what we're getting here. What'd you guys think about this one?
This is cool. Great cover. I thought this was crazy-ish. I think that the eating people thing is a thing that, kind of gets brought up every once in a while, and it's
in like your friend group.
Yeah, no, I just think when you get somewhere stranded, it's a topic that comes up.
Like
so.
When your Uber's a little late at Dave and Buster's. What you mean? Now all of a sudden you ate your way through a 21st birthday party.
Oh my god! Think people are having 21st birthdays at Dave and Buster's?
Definitely. Definitely.
First time would drink, where would you want to be? David Buster's.
Exactly. That's very fun. And honestly, a lot of those people are already pre-marinated in Jägermeister. Yum, yum.
It's the only way to go.
Spices. So many spices.
But, yeah, I love both stories in this, although I'm not... I will hope we get past the people eating kind of story.
I do want to back you up here, because the whole thing felt very Walking Dead adjacent to me. When the thing that's interesting about this is they're inside of Godzilla.
Right.
And the first two issues, I think I lauded for really playing with that concept in an interesting way and expanding it as they went. This third issue did not. They're inside of a boat most of the time. It sounds like they're going to get back to that in the last one, but like, not to write this issue for the comic for them, but like the idea of fighting your way through a Godzilla's body, that's cool and interesting and different. Eating people on a boat, like you're saying, Pete, is not. And I think it's darkly done and it's well executed, but there's other things that are more interesting going on in the world of this book.
Great. Yeah, I mean, at least they moved through it quickly. It was like, I guess they are the Walking Dead in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And when you say move through it quickly, you mean like Pete at a 21st birthday party at David Buster's, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's like, can I get these humans turned into chicken fingers immediately?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We can deep fry anything here.
Pete. Mozzarella sticks are basically fingers, let's be honest. Yeah.
Now, are you better friends with Dave or Buster, Pete?
Buster.
He knows. Pete knows both the owners.
Easiest predictive answer right there. Is Dan Buster sort of like Walt and Roy Disney, where like Roy just handled the money?
Dave was in charge. Dave owned a restaurant and Buster owned a video game place. And Pete was the guy who was like, you got to bring these together.
Yeah, come
There's
on,
gotta
guys.
Be a way.
Oh, Pete's like the Pete Best of Dave and Buster's? Like, he could have been there?
Yes, they said that at one point. They were like, wow, Pete, you're the best. Pete Best. Well, yeah. Anyway, that's it for the stack, I guess. If you'd like to support the show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We'd love to chat with you about comics. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com, for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Dave, Pete, and Buster just doesn't work. One of us has to go.
PB&J? And,
What? But Pete, you can come here and eat anyone, any human you want, any day of the week.
They're all chicken fingers in my mind.
Yeah, you know they have the same deal at Chuck E. Cheese.